Warning, the following podcast contains scenes of extreme clipping, digital distortion, and graphic equalizer abuse that some listeners may find offensive. Audiophile discretion is advised. Broadcasting to you not quite live from the palatial Main Tiltio Studios here in the beautiful downtown Edmonton, Alberta. For the education, elucidation, emancipation, enlightenment, and mental emolument of the Nipponist Koi Poloi, my name is Ian Warner, and this is DieCast. DieCast, of course, being a weekly show featuring our favorite topics from Japan and Japanese popular culture from a Western perspective. Well, welcome one and all to, I guess, what could be described as the first live DieCast over the internet. I can say broadcasting live for once.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't.
Yeah.
You've been lying to us for, like, what, 3 or 4 years?
You need an on-air light on now.
No, I have one. I have one sitting behind. It's in front of me. You can't see it, chat, because, you know, I hate you. But anyway, wow, joining me today, you've heard our three guest panelists from Olds, Alberta. It's Brendan Beach Dairy.
What is this weekly bullshit all of a sudden? Are you promising things that we're going to be doing? I can't wait.
We've been weekly for the past 3 weeks. I was in Lethbridge last week, and we still managed to get a show going.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Being all responsible and shit.
Yes. So also from Calgary, Alberta, that's the voice of Aaron Dearden.
Confound these ponies. They drive me to podcast.
And, of course, the man from World FM, I remember this time, and the big O, James Oikawa.
Yay, I shoehorned my way back into this thing.
Yes, we needed a fourth. So, we got a big steaming pile of topics again here today from Japan, but yeah. Aaron, you wanted to talk about ponies.
Well, I guess we are talking about ponies now that you've brought it up, and I've brought it up. You guys haven't watched this week's episode, have you?
I like that we're now on a weekly schedule already for it.
I've completely not watched this week's, sadly. We should have. Last night, I should have sat down and watched it, but I did not.
When was the last time we all had a show that we watched weekly on a schedule like this?
I don't recall Star Trek The Next Generation having a magical pony show.
I have a pick that's relevant to that. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to less episodes with the Cutie Mark Crusaders in it. That's all I'll say.
All right. Well, I guess that's our weekly update of ponies here. Let's go on to our first actual Japanese topic then. So, who likes cell phones?
I love cell phones.
Me.
I like cell phones.
Who likes robots?
Me too.
Yeah. Who likes creepy, limbless, dead-eyed things that are vaguely related to cell phones?
My mother!
Silent Hill fans?
Well, this week we're actually going to start off talking about the new Elfoid humanoid mobile phone.
Oh god, what is that?
I
look at it, chat.
Yeah, well, robotic researchers from Osaka University have teamed up with NTT Docomo and Qualcomm to develop a handheld humanoid phone that brings a new dimension to mobile communications.
New element of fear.
Yes, this thing is hideous. It's the creepiness of it is that it looks kind of like, I guess, the best description.
They look like voodoo dolls.
Yeah, they look like a voodoo doll that's mixed with those angels from the end of the abyss with a human head.
I kind of think they look like a cross between a fetus, the robots from iRobot with Will Smith, and the tequila monster from Poltergeist 2.
Well, and they're covered in a soft, fleshy, urethane skin.
They're 8 inches long, and they have a soft, nubbiny point at the bottom.
Yes, and it
kind of reminds me of Lilith from Evangelion.
That too, yes.
Yeah, kind of.
And there's a 3-foot-long version as well.
Yeah, that was the precursor, wasn't it?
When you need a less mobile
The Telenoid
phone.
Came first. Yeah. The Telenoid, the big robot.
That's the one, the big one. They also have a motion capture system and a camera so that it'll watch the user's face and transmit that motion data to another Elfoid phone. So it's like they said, how can we take FaceTime from the iPhone and make this the creepiest experience we could possibly have?
It seems that, because if you're going to speak into this, if you're going to use this as a phone, like the little one, the 8-inch, 8 inches, Jesus Christ, that's huge. But you have this thing, and you're going to talk into it. And so what are you going to do? You're going to pick it up, and then you're going to put this tiny little creepy, like, faceless doll thing up to your ear. You're not going to get me anywhere near trying to put this thing up to my ear and then have it start whispering things into my ear. It's like a Japanese horror film.
I don't think that's what they want you to do with it, though. I'm betting it's probably stare at it? I think so.
This is actual FaceTime.
Oh God! Seeing them hang these things from the ceiling like they're little ghosts.
Tell me that doesn't look like something out of a horror video game or movie or something like that.
Oh yeah.
With these things like hanging and nailed to the walls.
All you need is like eyeless babies with wings that have razor sharp fangs, and yeah, we're right there.
It's like, what were those little thingies from the Princess Mononoke?
The Kodama.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I guess the big thing here is that there is a precedent for this, that people wanted this, I guess.
What kind of precedent could there possibly be?
Anyone who watched Macross Frontier.
Oh, yeah.
they wanted a cute little squeezable, animal phone. And instead we get thalidomide baby.
Wow.
Leave it to the Japanese to bring up something like this.
Oh, God.
So I guess the question is, how much would you pay for this?
Nothing, because I wouldn't buy it.
$0 for the 2-year contract.
I would want them to pay me to take it personally.
I could see Fido doing this, but they'd want to replace the head of it with like a dog's head. It'd probably be more friendly, I think, at that point.
Well, I think we've milked that as much as we can.
Oh, you know what? Actually, no. This makes me think of something interesting, though. The fact is that they've created this thing. It's just – all it is they stuffed phone guts inside of this, like, tiny real doll. But what it makes me think of is the fact that since you can do this, the exploration of stuffing phones inside of unusual dolls – then you could start doing that with children's toys and give them cell phones that are like actual toys to play with as well. So the what they're developing now, creepy as hell, but you could actually start selling like Stretch Armstrong figures or Transformers and stuff. Well, maybe not Transformers because they're not really – I guess really the only thing that's like soft and cuddly and plushy and shit like that would be like My Little Pony toys.
It all comes back to the ponies in the end.
It did, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, has anyone watched the demonstration video of the Telenoid robot, the big one? And watched how it moves?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh my god. It is also creepy as hell. I'll link it in the chat real quick here, but it basically sits on a stand with its arms stretched out wide like it's going to give you a hug. And It really does mimic the person who's on the other end, but without arms attached, so it's like a limbless torso writhing around on a stand.
Aaron, are you using a USB headset?
Yes.
Could you unplug it and replug it in again? You're horribly Cyloning for us.
Sorry.
How's that?
Much better. Fixes it completely. There's apparently a bug with certain USB headsets that causes them to do this.
Oh, crap. Now I got to be careful when I buy one.
Yep. You get 1 hour, and then you find out you're a Cylon.
Mm. Crap.
Got a timer.
Yeah, there's the link in the chat if anybody wants to watch it on silent.
URL removed is my favorite URL.
Oh! Well, I guess the Ustreamers won't get it then.
Well, let me see if I can paste it in, because people like me.
Yep, wink.
Anyway.
Oh god, the thing, it moves. It's creepy.
I don't think the phones do this yet, but they want it to. They want them to.
Ugh.
It's increased telepresence, right?
Creepy telepresence.
And the mouth moves a little bit too. Cool.
Suppose I could show a few minutes of that for the chat here.
We're one step closer to. I don't know. I'm not sure. I want to be closer to this. To the abyss, yes.
To the abyss.
The ultimate
not
goal
Chobits,
of any of these projects is likely to be Chobits.
That's right. Actually, it says all the buttons are embedded in the chest, but they didn't say where the on-off button was on these things.
I really have to say that, you know, the thing about this is you're talking about Chobits as an option. This is something I would not want to have anywhere near my genitals.
Yeah.
Despite that it looks like it's made to be raped, it can't defend itself.
Ah.
For once, Japan makes something that you can't fuck.
Yeah.
But you know they're working towards it, because as soon as holodecks are invented, they're going to have a whole new industry of spooge cleaners.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm watching this now myself, and I love the way that the old man is talking to it like it's a small child.
He's even bending over and looking down at it at one point.
But he keeps getting closer to it and touches more of it.
Holding it by the shoulders.
It's horrid.
Does he start shaking it at any point?
I don't know. No, he doesn't.
Thank God, no. Okay, well, speaking of things that are horrifying. So does anyone remember back when Japan put together that life-size Gundam out in Shizuoka?
Yes.
Yes.
I was really sad that I couldn't actually go see that myself. Well, it turned out that... You know, after a while there, the Chinese decided to build their own orange copy.
Orange cop. Oh yeah, I see the photos now.
Yeah. Yep. It's not Gundam. Reary.
No, it's just a regular old orange Gundam. And
it's not Gundam because it has spikes on it.
Well, that's what happened. The Japanese noticed, got a little upset, and sent some letters. And so now there is a new Chinese Gundam that has a radiation symbol on the front and spiky shoulders and a mustache on its face. It looks like a horrible mix between the,
Turn A Gundam.
Yeah, between the Turn A Gundam, a Gundam, a Zaku, and,
And Unicron.
So thankfully, Senkaku Complex decided to go ahead and, compile the best of the best of the fan art of this particular Gundam. I'm just so happy with the way that the Japanese have embraced this new mech as something to be worshipped as a... worshipped on the altar.
God, is that communist Gundam?
All these spikes and...
It's actual China Gundam. Yeah, it's got the stars on the front in the one picture.
See, I didn't really know what was going on here, because I thought what happened was is that China had made their awful Gundam, and then Bandai got mad and Japan yelled at China and they said, okay, we'll take it down. And then somebody in China says, oh, well, you know, we could build the Gundam that's the Chinese Gundam that shows up in Gundam. Why don't we just do that? Because when I look at all this art and I look at all the things that look like clips that came from television shows... it just kind of makes me think, you know, wait a second, did this actually appear in the show?
No, it never did.
It's all good, right? I love how the fact that when you see all the art, it's like, oh yeah, this looks like it was made in the 1990s, and it's all grainy and shit with all the explosions, and yeah, it's like, I love how clever fan artists get when it comes to shit like this.
Yeah, no, it's I'm actually surprised that there hasn't been a garage kit made of this yet.
Oh, but I'm sure somebody is mocking that shit up as we speak.
Yeah, like how long ago was it that this came out? Maybe they haven't had enough time yet.
Possibly.
Well, I think the original Chinese Gundam appeared maybe a year ago now?
I think so. So they had to take it down and redo it? Was that the idea?
Yeah, they had to redo it. They put a drape over it, and then it kind of disappeared from the news for a while. and then it reappeared as this monstrosity.
Well, cool. I'm glad that...
what they really should do is have an episode of Kerero Gunso, and then he's, you know, putting out all these garage kits, and then, of course, you know, they realize it's all a fake, and their plot usually ends up backfiring on them as usual.
I really need
Jason here to get his opinion on.
I can only be so excited about the fact that they made a giant Chinese
Gundam.
Yeah, I'm like, it's cool. It's also not terribly surprising seeing what goes on in Chinese theme parks, but it's like, all right, so nice. It's still just, I look at the actual image of, like, the actual picture of it, and it just looks so ridiculous. Like, they were like, let's take the round shoulders from, like, Samus Aran's Varya suit, and let's give it, like, these accordion legs that look like they'd be on traditional, like, Asian samurai, whatever you want to call it, armor, that kind of crap. It's in itself is a total remix of other crazy shit, and I just get the sense of it. They want it to be like a lion somehow, like a big shisha type lion, you know?
Wait, like hashisha?
Hashisha, yeah. Oh God.
Well, we're without Jason here, so we'll bring it back to Canada then for a bit. I just posted the link into the chat there.
You URL removed.
Oh, everyone else got the URL removed from me too?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, you should. Well, we're going to have to fix that in post. For the
also,
next.
anytime you copy shit into a... anytime you try to click a link from...
Into Docker media sites?
It fucks up your... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All you have to do is actually put a slash on the end of the links that they have... And it starts working again.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I discovered that nifty new trick.
What a complete fucking waste of time that I have to go through in order to view any of the content on their site.
Well, it turns out we're going to bring this closer to home. This is about Canada again, or more specifically Canada's portrayal in the media, and this time in the Japanese media. So who here have heard about THQ's new Homefront? Because you all have next-gen consoles, that's right.
Isn't Homefront like a white supremacist group?
I thought it was, too. This comes to us from Kotaku. It turns out that the Japanese version of this new Homefront game, which it portrays America being invaded by North Korea and a horrible dictatorship, and then fighting back against that to make America clean and pure again, Homefront.
Okay.
Well, it turns out in Japan... due to certain laws and agreements from their ratings board for games, they're not allowed to portray living politicians, which includes Kim Jong-il, who is leader of North Korea, and he's portrayed quite prominently in the opening to this game, Homefront. So they decided to refer to it simply as a northern leader of a certain country to the north.
Which logically means that...
North of Japan? Yeah. North Korea? Yes. North of America?
I wonder who's there.
I, for one, would actually love to have a game that talks about the death of Stephen Harper.
Oh, God.
Well, you might get your wish if we have another election coming up.
I don't think you understand how elections work, James.
I wonder if this means then that people will probably end up modding the game when it comes out, or trying to mod it to try to start slapping like in the photo, right? They've obviously mocked in a tiny maple leaf on top of the policeman's outfit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I wonder if they'll start doing that and be like, yeah, we'll just put them in all this kind of Canadian clothing. We'll add A to the end of everything they're saying
and show us all living in igloos.
This is the Canadian thing too, right? We always have this kind of complex that it's like when they made the Blame Canada song for South Park, and we were like, oh, that's hilarious. We think that's so funny, and and everyone is singing the song. Even in Canada, we sing the song all the time, and it's kind of like, I don't fucking know the song, but we love it. We're like, oh, you noticed us. Thanks. There are only 30 million people living to your north and send you all of our wood. Fucking, it's nice that you know who we are. That's all we ask. Good God.
Well, as anyone who watched the closing ceremonies of the Olympic Games knows, that we're all about making fun of ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically all we have.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Oh, man. Actually, it's funny. I don't want to get into the conversation about the nature of humor as it comes out of Canada versus Japan, but I was talking with Dan Ross last night, and we were discussing how on the last ICAST, we had that whole thing about BBC Racism Month and what happened on QI. And I had another thought that I had forgot about with in reference to the gentleman who survived both of those atomic blasts, and therefore there's a lot of laughter about people saying, wow, he's like the unluckiest guy. And then everyone laughs, is like, yeah, you know. And it's not like it wasn't making fun of him at all. And I realized that, like, it is hard for me to feel bad about Japan being upset about that as much as I need to be. Like, I understand that, oh, they don't have a sense of humor about this, but I'm like, yeah, but when I see all the crazy shit that they do in reference to any other country in the world and all the crazy xenophobic attitudes and stuff towards other countries, like, and they have, like, oh yeah, we'll have a guy dress up in blackface and be Obama.
Well, yeah, it's pretty much the only country that can still get away with the blackface.
Yeah, it's
or
really
just
weird.
Even watch an episode of Hetalia.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, and everything that's stereotypes writ large, and it just kind of strikes me as I have a hard time feeling sorry for you that you feel offended by somebody actually just saying, "Wow, that dude's really unlucky." And you're like, that's very offensive. And I'm like, I can't feel sorry for you for that at all, actually, now. I won't ever make – when I'm in Japan, I won't start making light of the atomic bombs dropping or mention World War II. But, I mean, shit. I can't get behind their outrage.
Okay, well
– that kind of segues into one of our other topics, doesn't it?
I think we should bring that up then, the fact that there is an issue that came up just this past week about one of my favorite bands in Japan, Kishidan.
Oh.
And they ended up wearing to, it looks like, a television interview of some sort, a group of SS uniforms.
No.
This again comes to us from Japan, Probe. And, yeah. Turns out
it's Racism Month in Japan as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that Simon Wintersall Center, a Jewish group, demanded an apology.
My God. You know what's funny? And look at the hairstyles. I'm just looking at this and thinking Leningrad Cowboys.
They're all kind of dressed up like high school punks. Like, they're
kind of, yeah. Well, that's their thing, right?
Yeah.
They usually dress up in those Oendon type uniforms, usually, right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. They actually, that's their deal, is they dance around in Oendon uniforms. But this isn't, I guess, too far off when you consider actually the genesis of the Japanese schoolboy uniform was it Prussian military and naval uniforms?
Mm-hmm.
So this is really just one step removed.
Yes. It's true. Could you imagine, though, if in Germany kids went to school wearing uniforms like this? Like, it was the actual uniform you had to wear to go to school in?
Mm-hmm.
Good God.
Well, I mean, to be quite honest, again, maybe the logo, maybe the swastika itself, but damn it, Nazi uniforms were very, very stylish.
Oh, yeah.
And they still are.
Yeah. They look remarkably good. It's just all of the
extra most military uniforms do.
Yeah. But it's just the association that's been conferred upon this particular style.
I'm not going to make any judgment calls on your particular your particular fetishes, Aaron, but I personally don't have the same feeling towards modern, you know, American military uniforms that I do. Even the grunts of the Nazis looked good doing what they did.
All the stuff was designed by Hugo Boss, wasn't it? That's what I've once heard.
I believe that's, yeah, that sounds right, yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, it all really, I mean, that's the thing. I look at these guys, I'm like, they all look really good. Like, they all, it's all very sharp and very nicely pressed, and everything else is cool. And it's like, yeah, if you had just dropped the Iron Cross and dropped some of the other decorations and shit on it, then, you know, it might not have been such a big problem, but it's,
yeah.
No, it still would have been a big problem. Who am I?
Yeah. I don't think the red armband really helps to the leader.
Yeah, even with the no swastika on it, it's still, yeah.
I guess he always wears the group leader armband when they're in their Owen-Don type uniforms, but...
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That's what identifies him as the leader. You know, that's the same thing that Haruhi does in her show.
Absolutely. But,
this isn't also the first time there was an article that one of the Takara Zuka Review women, she dressed up as an SS officer for one of their plays, and her picture was used in a Pond's Cream ad campaign.
Really?
Yeah, and okay. It's when they're off, they use Pond's, but unfortunately the association was there that she was dressed up in an SS uniform as well, so it's not the first time that this has happened.
Oh dear.
Japan.
Well, at least they did apologize for it, and they won't be wearing those outfits again.
You kind of, what I almost want to have happen is just enough of these racist things going on all back and forth, like just the trading off back and forth. I just want it to all of a sudden everyone just say, okay, hang on. We all have now canceled it out, so we have no reason to be mad at each other anymore, and
it's
the next
okay.
person just, yeah, the next person does something bad, then we'll have to do something bad again, and so let's just kind of put it stop to all this weird shit.
Yeah, well, as people, you know, as we age and the younger population grows up, the education of the younger people may be lacking in some certain cases too. So, you know, you go up to a young kid these days and you ask, okay, do you know what happened in World War II? And they're like, what's World War II? So,
yeah.
And as time goes on,
exaggeration really.
And as time goes on, you know, I think these things are going to be forgotten, and then, you know, somebody will see this and they'll think it's new and they'll think it's stylish, and then some old person will be like, hey, you can't do that. I'm exactly. offended.
We're probably like about 60 or 70 years out from being at a point where it's all going to be all memories, right? It'll be all remembrances of this kind of stuff, and then
like
it'll...
The last first World War veteran actually has finally passed away now.
Yeah, yeah. So we're probably looking at another 30 years before the final, you know, World War II veteran will pass away, or at least people around that era. And I don't know, I kind of get this sense of, like, by the time we're in our old age, all sorts of crazy shit will be going on, and, you know, because I'm trying to think of what could we possibly get shocked about in the future, and I'm like, well, it's not like you're going to see in 40 years a bunch of high school girls deciding that it would be awesome to start running around in burkas or something, and then yeah. us getting upset because they're like, oh, do you know what that represents? Because we're of the irony age, right? We're kind of like, oh, we get it. Yes, yeah. being ironic.
But per Ian's previous statement, burkas aren't really at all that fashionable.
Yeah. You never know what people are going to find fashionable in the future.
That's
yeah.
true.
I'm still waiting for my aluminum foil jumpsuit.
Yes, as many episodes of old Doctor Who and old Star Trek try to think of the future as dressing, and even the next generation. So,
oh yeah,
there's no accounting for taste.
No, it's true.
Skorts.
There's no accounting for young people's tendency to wear whatever pisses their parents off the most.
Yes, another good point.
Okay, well, I think we've beat that horse to death as well. Now, moving on here, I haven't had a chance to read it myself, but I do love the header image on this page, being a gigantic Gundam fan. What's the deal with what's going on at Colony Drop right now, Aaron?
Well, basically, there's a response article to one of the things we talked about last week, the Ars Technica article about why anime fans pirate the shows they love. Long story short... that's not actually why American anime fans pirate the shows they love.
Oh, really?
Not entirely, anyway. I think in last week's show, we did cover a couple of the reasons they discuss in this counter-article, mainly the video quality opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a few other things in here that they point out haven't been the case for years in terms of reasoning for downloading fan subs or. Sorry, I'm losing track of myself here. Basically, they're just going out and saying that this Ars Technica article was not up to snuff, basically.
Ah.
Well, really, only getting three opinions?
Opinions from people who don't appear to have been part of modern anime fandom for the past few years.
Yeah, it wasn't really a thorough article on Ars Technica's part, and they usually are, so, yeah.
So, walk us through it here, what the idea is behind, what are the real reasons?
Let's see, basically, the real reasons they have listed here, let's just quote the article a little bit here. So it's, can we get to the real reasons that people pirate the anime they love without moralizing? We'll list them. 1. While owning tangible physical media is a nice consumerist feeling, digital copies are far more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
2. Downloaded media is usually ripped from the highest quality video sources and look better than any DVD or online stream. Yep. 3. There are titles that are extremely unlikely / unprofitable for U.S. licensing, particularly the old ones, the long ones, the ones for girls, the ones with robots, the ones for old people.
A Legend of Galactic Heroes just was released on Blu-ray, at least the first 10 episodes.
Indeed.
And that'll never see the light of day here.
Never, yeah. Never, never.
Nope.
And 4, in bold, it's free. It's purely self-interest.
I have to agree.
Nobody
that...
wants to say it, but that's one of the big reasons.
And I have to agree. One of the big, and I always kind of thought that was taken as rote. I mean, if I can get something for free and it were versus having to pay for something, then obviously taking it for free is fine. But it's also a sense of, as I'm learning as I get older, getting something for free doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting the best value anyway, right? Because when we would buy Chinese ripoff DVDs that had shitty translations and stuff to them, you do that once and you realize that I'm not going to do that anymore, right? Because seriously, Ian, watching your copy of Gravitation.
Oh God, that was horrible.
Where his name was Shake Dong, and I was like,
it also doesn't help that when you purchase those bootlegs, it also goes towards partially supporting the Chinese mafia triads, whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, we don't all realize that.
Hope is that when I do buy those, my hope is that by supporting them, hopefully I'll get a free pass at some point. I'm going to be walking down the streets of Hong Kong, and I'm going to be about to be knifed by a Triad member, and I'll say, wait, I bought DVDs from Zhang Wang.
Yeah, and they'll be like, oh.
You know Zhang Wang?
I'll be like,
oh, you're fine then.
I used to
sell merry way.
Son Mei. And they're like, oh shit, no.
You are Beach Dinner, you are Leader.
We're taking you out for dinner, you know? But I really do think, like, that's paying less money because we didn't really have a way of getting those things free. We could only get them cheaply. And so we get them cheaply, and then you realize how badly it's done. So,
it's not worth even having at that price.
You realize, well, why bother spending less money? But now that it's become, it's not only free, but if I was getting stuff that was free and it was some guy trying to translate it and I couldn't understand it and it wasn't any good, then I'd be like, well, I guess I'm not watching the show because I can't understand what's going on.
Yeah, but that's not what's going on. It's free and it's high quality.
And it's those two things put together that's what makes it mean something to us. It's not that it's free or that it's high quality. It's like, well, because it's both, then why wouldn't you want it? It's like when Napster came out and people were trading music. It's like, well, it's free and I'm getting high quality rips of music. MP3s did that.
No,
but then when iTunes.
But that's a little bit different. Because that's like comparing that to your Son Mei discs, which were perfect representations of the product. And they weren't necessarily free, but you were willing to pay for them because they were slightly better than the MP3 and you were getting the exact digital copy.
Exactly. And it was also cheaper than buying the original Japanese CD. Yes. And so it those kind of bootlegs operate in that gray area where it's like it's better to have that. And I look at it as like with what iTunes has done. And I have not purchased stuff on iTunes, but I understand why people do it, because why would you want to go and learn how to use torrents and have to put up with the shit that comes out of LimeWire? And anytime I go looking for something, if I'm like, I need to torrent something, right? Like I I needed to go get a system disk for Windows 7, right? Mm-hmm. Not because I'm using it, but because the guy that I'm fixing something for, he doesn't have one. I'm like, well, then fuck it. I need one. I got to go download one. And it takes me a half hour to find one that I can get so I can download it, burn a copy, do what I need to install, and then I don't need it anymore, so I break the fucking thing in half because I obviously don't want to be keeping this thing in my house, right? So it's like when things like that happen, it would be a lot easier for me to just go to the store and spend $160 on it. But I mean, if Microsoft had a thing where it's like, oh, if you own a copy of the key and you send us $5, we'll just send you a disc or we'll give you the right to download it from our website. I'd be like, fuck it. I'd spend the $5, download a copy and, you know, have it be registered to whatever key it is. And then you've got it. And I wouldn't have to go walking around to try to find the damn thing. In a lot of cases, it's worth spending the money. If it's the right kind of money.
Well, yeah, it just shows how much our values have devalued media and products these days. Most people don't want to pay anything more than $1 for songs and $3 for a TV episode.
Right. But then on the other hand, when you have a lot of people doing stuff like that, you can actually prove the level of support and the level of interest. Like it's almost true entertainment democracy at that point.
Yeah.
You have all these people saying, I want to give Nathan Fillion some money because he mentioned one time that if he had $300 million, he'd go buy Firefly and then release it for free. And it would always be available to people if they ever wanted to watch it. So you have people starting Kickstarter campaigns to try to collect money to do that. And it's like, that's ridiculous, but still, mm-hmm. what if they collected $2 or $3 million and they could buy the rights to it? And that, what if that actually happened? Holy shit. Like, that would be pretty amazing.
Unfortunately, I don't think that would actually happen. They'd probably just end up donating it to charity.
Yeah, probably.
Well, there are those people who bought the rights to that one. They bought the rights to one really old anime and they started translating it and dubbing it themselves just as a fan project and releasing DVDs. I think it was Raideen, I think that show was.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard of
the Anime World Order has discussed this a little bit. I could probably link it to you later.
But then you've also got, like, say with video games, you've also got companies like Apple and whatnot, and they're releasing these, you know, Smurf Village for free or for $5, and they sort of devalued video games that way. And then you've got Nintendo saying in a comment recently that, you know, they don't like that these games have been so cheap because they're devaluing the idea of video games as a whole. And they think video games should be, you know, $30, $35, $40 a pop.
Well, there's another question there, James. Did they devalue them or did they actually just bring them back to a value that they feel they should be at? It's the same thing that happened to the music industry.
Yeah, so, argument.
This has devalued all of our product. Well, no, actually, no one actually wanted to pay $20 for a CD. We'd just like to pay 99 cents for a song.
Yeah. And I have to say that, I mean, as a Nintendo fan, I understand where they're coming from. Because if we look at what has come out on the Wii in force, right? The Wii has a lot of good releases, but what has come out on the Wii in force is a lot of waggle shovelware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm a fan of Nintendo, so let's be clear. But yeah, I look at that and I'm like, why is there title upon title upon title of people just throwing shit together because they feel that, I could make a buck doing it. And now you literally can make a buck by throwing a game together, throwing it on the iPhone, selling it for 99 cents. And you might not ever Angry Birds it, but if you make 10 games and throw it out there, that's 10 chances that one of them becomes an Angry Birds. And
doesn't have to become an Angry Birds. If you get 10,000 viewers,
you can make an easy 10 grand.
Seven grand, but let's not get into
that. They take 30%, But the thing is, yeah, I mean, you can make a fair chunk of cash, and all you need is 10,000 copies to be sold, as opposed to, like, in the old days, you wouldn't think of something being a smash hit unless you sold like 100,000 or 500,000 or a million copies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I understand where Iwata's coming from, because he sees it as the 99-cent game is definitely it's encroaching upon that territory of playing a game. But I also think that their concentration on building a casual game market And because they said we went in for that casual game market right away with the Wii and with stuff on the Touch Generations and stuff on the DS. But yeah, the iPhone is going to start really, and not just iPhone, but Android, but okay, let's say mostly the iPhone, is going to start eating away at that market in a big damn hurry. Because who wants to carry their phone and another gaming console if you can keep all on your phone? But on the other hand, I want to play Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, and I would never, ever want to play it on my iPhone. So, or an iPad. I just cannot see any interest in, I'm like, that has a, the control scheme wouldn't work for me. I would not be happy doing it.
Well, I don't think that's really a case, because if they're making a game for the iPad, it would be, they'd have to change the control scheme to make it playable. Otherwise, it'd be something that wouldn't sell.
I'm playing a game called Grokeon right now on my iPhone, trying to play this game. And it was free, which is why I got it. Really beautiful graphics. And it's essentially, it's a Metroid is what it is. You start off as this robot, you run around, you shoot enemies, and it's an exploration-based game. You have to go back and forth. So it's a Metroid game. Mm-hmm. And you gather energy tanks. Like, it really is a Metroid game. It's quite surprising. And it has the most frustrating control scheme I've ever had to work with, because there's no feedback from the controls, because it's all touch-based. So when I push right, I have to drag a disc outside of a circle, and that means that I'm walking right. But if I want to start aiming in a different direction, I can't. I have to push that circle to the edge of the rim, but not past the edge of the rim, and then that way it'll register as, oh yeah, now I want to swing my gun around so I can do it. And this is how they decide to build the shooting method. And I'm just like, it's so frickin' frustrating to play this game, because they're using this control method. But as I've been thinking about how would you change the control so that it works? Like, would you do dual stick where one shoots and then the other one walks and you push up to jump? And I'm just like, I don't know. It's still something about the exactness of it just doesn't feel right. And I'm like, there's still something about discrete controls that really appeal to me.
Or should you really consider what sort of game you're making for the platform?
I mean, there's that.
The same thing came up with the Wii, when, you know, any sort of action that could have easily been conducted by button press was suddenly made to be waggly.
Yeah.
For no good reason.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Hey.
Can I get back to the article?
Oh, shit. No, great. Yeah.
Fascinating though this is.
Please, we didn't.
That's okay. There was one more point that I wanted to bring up before we finished here.
Okay.
Was the last bit of this article that's the main point that grabs me is the point about translation. Mainly that we talked last week about how one of the complaints in fan subs was Americanization. And this Colony Drop article points out the fact that Americanization, I do not think that word means what you think it means. Mainly
go ahead.
Sorry. Most fan sub translations out there are really not very good translations, even if they look like they're trying to be faithful. Hang on, let me just see if I can find the right paragraph
Who are we to judge on the quality of a translation if we're not familiar with it, really? So
I'm just going to read another quote here. It says, "Let's talk about what Americanization really is. Americanization is when Brock's rice ball is referred to as a donut. And it's when the main character of Detective Conan is referred to as Jimmy. It's not when a translator attempts to translate meaning and intent rather than transliterate words directly, or when they don't match subtleties or the subtitles to the hair color of the speaker, or when they somehow resist the urge to add animated magic sprinkles to the subtitle track." "And the absence of a translator note about every single possible Japanese cultural detail is not Americanization either." It really bothers me when people say that when a translation doesn't have honorifics or doesn't have... I'm getting a lot of static from you guys.
I think Beej has actually decided that he's going to take a phone call. He's messing with his... This could be Dan Ross, one of our other hosts, joining us.
Oh. Trying to get up all in my grill.
I mean, I don't speak enough. I understood what was meant in when you say Americanization. Like, I understand that it's a sense of I understand that, yeah, the definition of, oh yeah, rice balls, a donut, whatever. But I also, to me, you know, when you're translating meaning and intent, there is a certain thing where it's like we want to change a joke because we know that it won't work. And the one I always use is the Pokemon one where Caterpie shows up and Misty sees it and she babbles and she runs away and backs into this tree about how, oh my God, it's a bug, I don't want to touch a bug, kind of thing, right? And then Ash shows up in a cow suit and he says, maybe you'd like it better if it was a Caterpie or something, they make say, right? Because it's the only way to translate a really, really obscure joke, because she's going mushy, 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 and then Ash appears in the cow suit and goes moo-ushi, which is moo, as a cow would say, except they would say mo in Japan, I guess. But and then ushi is a cow, but mushi is bug. So that's how the two of them, and it's like this really weird pun. And I was like, good for the. I had no idea why that they did it in the American one, but I'm like, good for them for finding a way to make the joke make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it's like an episode of Detective Conan being trying to, you know, if he starts saying, "Ooh, it's you're the reason you're the murderer is because you have this symbol in your name, which is in full kanji," and that's going to be pretty much impossible to translate into American style.
Indeed. So you're either going to have to go exact literal and say, okay, your Japanese name has this thing in it.
No, I think they should
make something. Sorry, go ahead.
They should change the names of the characters to be things like Joe Murderson.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If anyone has watched the second Detective Conan movie, The 14th Target, basically the people that are victims in that movie are chosen because of parts of the symbols in their name referring to, you know, numbers. And I never watched the English translation, so I don't know how they did it, but I remember reading something that it was really contrived and it really didn't work.
I guess my main point is basically just that that kind of extreme Americanization hasn't really been present in anime in anime professional releases for a long time now. And the fact that people are still complaining about it bothers me, because that doesn't happen anymore. And what they are complaining about is mostly just like missing honorifics or missing translation notes. And that's not what makes a good translation, really.
No, it's true.
No. Yeah.
Actually, there's a really good, series of YouTube videos. It's listed as an anime fan sub documentary, but it's really more of an anime fan sub rant. But it goes into a lot of really good detail about what does make a good anime translation, and I really recommend that people watch it. It's put out by, I believe, he calls himself Ota King. James the Ota King or something like that.
Oh, yes, this is the other link you sent to us.
Yes. I think it's a five-part video. It's about, I think, an hour long. It's not too much of a time investment. It's really interesting.
We're just playing some of it now on the chat, and wow, I think it's been animated by himself.
Yeah, he did animate a bunch of that himself, yeah.
It's really quite 80s, which is amazing.
Yeah, I think he himself has said that he's quite a fan of the older anime style, and that does color his view a little bit, but he does still make mostly valid points throughout.
Well, and as you said, that is one of the that was basically the prime time for the horrible Americanization of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he shows a lot of really egregious examples of recent fan subs, though. Kind of makes you want to retch by the end.
Yeah.
I will definitely be keeping my eye on that.
It's funny, anyways, actually, I think I'm done.
one of my favorite fan subbers is one who regularly takes the piss out of just about anything that's been subbed. Even the subs they do, they actually have a lot of fun just screwing around and making gags that are meant to piss off the more serious, you know, anal retentive otaku. The group GG, who I love, because they'll do so. They're the ones who got that whole translator note, Keikaku means plan.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who really popularized how retarded that whole thing was.
Oh God, yeah. The fan sub documentary really harps on this one One Piece fan sub group who insists on using nakama as a untranslatable word.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that's funny because there is an actual there's a translatable thing you can say to that. And like, no, but there's an intention, and there's a, you know what? Fuck, we're it's nice.
Wait, isn't this Oda King guy the same guy that wants to make his own Doctor Who anime?
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
wow. Oh, okay. Now I know who this guy is.
Yes, we covered him before on this very show, and awesome. Wow, that makes sense now.
I thought the art style looked familiar.
There's another translation article I could link here. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but it looks also quality, so I can link that to you here, too.
So we'll definitely put that in the show notes for people. And for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Enriching ourselves and everyone.
You're just giving it to me. Matt Thorne. Why do I know that name?
I know that sounds familiar, too, doesn't it?
I don't know, but it looks like he's fairly professional about the whole translation thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll just... Everyone can look at that on their own time, then, I guess.
Indeed. We're almost out of time ourselves, anyway.
I do believe we are so. So, with that, is there anything else anyone wanted to mention before we wrap this up?
I'm good?
Absolutely not. Great. So with that, I'm going to play the ending music, because I'm not used to doing that in...
Make sure to turn the volume down a little bit. It was a little loud last week.
I did notice that. It was a problem. How's that, Taryn?
I can't hear anything.
You can't hear a thing. Okay. So, Aaron, where can people find you and your wonderful works?
You can find me at twitter.com/ErynCerise, ErynCerise, or at themoderndaypirates.com/pirates/author/Erin.
Excellent. And James Oikawa, what are you up to these days?
I am Big O on Radio Wasabi, 1017 World FM. You can find me at twitter.com/RadioWasabi. There's also a Facebook group, and I am on every Sunday night at 11 p.m.
Perfect. Tune in, and you'll probably love it. And Beej, where can people find you?
I am TuxBeej on Twitter, but you can find more about what it is that I do, and Ian does, and other people do, all associated with Synaptic Chaos Theater, and that's www.synaptic-chaos.com. And look forward to a new website coming up very, very quickly as well. You can catch us at the Japanese Animation Festival, or JAF, in Camrose, Alberta, on March the 12th.
Excellent, man.
That's all of us, too. That's in yes. The anime match game as well.
Yes, Aaron will be coming out to do anime match game.
Looking forward to that. So, and of course, you can find me at tiltyhouse.com or at Coincidence Circus at circuit.tiltyhouse.com or iHorner on Twitter. And if you enjoy the show, again, please leave a review for us on iTunes. It is the best way for new viewers to find out more about the show. We're going to probably start doing these broadcasts live again each week, so look for it there, and we'll be sure to add that to the DieCast Twitter feed. That's at Die_cast, and you can, of course, find that on my own feed at iHorner on Twitter. So, with that, I am going to say the die has been cast.
End scene.
Yeah, and so now this is the point where we all, you know, talk over the ending credits like it's
the credits are running, but nobody can see us speak, and you're just going to turn us down anyway.
Yeah, well, no, I'm going to actually keep you guys up, but I'm just going to put up the logo here, which is exactly what I've done until the music fades out.
Oh,
once the music is done, which it's doing, I'll end the broadcast.
It feels like it's very professional.
Feels.
All we need is canned laughter.
Oh, I'm going to leave that in the show.